This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we'll be talking lawns and gardens and things dealing with agriculture and nature and all that good stuff. Justin Stefanski with us this morning. How are you today?
Doing great, Scott. It's really good to be here on this brisk, cold October morning.
I didn't really expect it to be this cold outside.
It was chilly this morning. I saw a light frost in some spots. It was 32 degrees when I left the house.
Yeah, that's pretty cold.
It's pretty cold. I brought in all the tropical plants yesterday, and I'm glad I did, because they'd be toast if not.
No tropical weather? That's
no.
The problem we need?
Isn't it crazy how we went from 98 degrees to now here we are at 32 in a matter of a couple weeks?
I know. I thought it was, I don't know, a hotter than usual summer, at least a few days of the week. It seemed like it was.
It was very hot and dry this year. You know, we've had these summers where we've had hot weather, but I think this year it was interesting because we had hot weather coupled with long durations of no rain. And it was stressful on our plants and in our people, really. I mean, I tell you what, I wasn't a fan of it. It was brutal for this summer.
Yeah, the Agriculture Extension Service, do you guys get more people coming in during the summers that are as hot as it was, or usually when it's a little cooler?
Well, here's the thing. We get a lot of people coming in when it is hot and dry because that's a condition where plants get stressed out. And there are certain diseases or insect pests that are very prevalent during that hot, dry weather. And plants are just like people. You know, if they're already stressed going into the summer season and then it does get hot and dry, it's survival of the fittest. So we saw a lot of unique diseases that, you know, these plants were at high susceptibility this summer. So we stayed pretty busy.
You know, it was this summer, wasn't it, that we had problems with the rivers, the droughts and everything? Or was that the summer before? I get them confused.
You know, I'm not exactly sure, but I could imagine we've had some issues this summer. I know some of the creeks around here were bone dry.
Yeah.
Overall creek up where I live in Rockvale, there was many days I would be driving to work and there was nothing but rocks.
Well, if it was this summer, then I had to drive all the way to Memphis for something or another. But I remember going just to see what the Mississippi River looked like.
That was last summer. I remember.
It was wild, though.
And the banks of the Mississippi, I mean, there were like archaeological sites that were being uncovered, old boats. And it was pretty crazy last summer. I remember that.
You know, I've never been swimming in the Mississippi River just because I always heard it's so dirty and there's not a good place to do that. But I did walk down into the river for the first time because it was so low. It was just weird.
We may never see it that low again in our lifetime.
That's
pretty wild.
Yeah, it was wild.
Absolutely.
Probably not good, but
probably not a good thing when you start to see the Mississippi River, receding its banks like that. But, you know, I think that was an extreme situation last year.
It was, for sure. Now, if the Farmer's Almanac is correct, I think we're going to have more of a wet winter than anything else.
I think that's what they're calling for. I've seen some long-term predictions of a more mild, above-average rainfall, above-average moisture. I think south of here it's supposed to be cooler, but we're in this middle of the country zone where it'll stay pretty mild. So I'm hopeful for that. Last two winters, man, it's been pretty brutal. The last couple years, we've had extreme low temperatures for a few days, and that just has wreaked havoc on so many plants in the landscape. So hopefully this year will not be the same.
Now, do you think it's going to get cold enough anytime soon to kill off some of the bug population?
You know, here's this misnomer about cold weather and bugs.
Uh-oh.
Yes, right. You know, people always assume that when we have these deep freezes that the insect populations are going to decrease. That's not necessarily the case.
Oh, granted.
Now, mosquitoes, I've noticed in my back field where it stays pretty moist, you know, last week they were terrible. This week I haven't seen a single one.
Huh.
So certain insects, like seasonal insects like mosquitoes, I think we're done with those. You know, knock on wood here, but, you know, a lot of these bug populations, those bugs are tough. They'll overwinter in cracks and crevices of trees and bark, underground. So as cold as it got the last 2 years, it really didn't affect a lot of our insects.
You know, I didn't really start seeing a lot of mosquitoes until, you know, I would say a month ago.
Right.
And
when
then
we got that big rain in August, they just came back with a vengeance. You know, they were ready. So you're right. It was pretty mild in this mosquito season for most of the summer. But then as soon as we got that good soaking rain from the first hurricane that came through, I noticed the mosquito population just skyrocketed.
Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about other insects that you don't, you know, routinely see every year, at least not in huge amounts, like fleas. I heard a lot of people talking about fleas over the past, I'd say, 2 months or so.
Really? Now, I have not heard any reports of fleas, but
they're not good things.
I'll tell you this. We had a flea infestation. Our two dogs got them a few years ago, and it was a nightmare. You know, to put it mildly, I have two dogs with a lot of hair, and it was not fun. So
how did you get rid of them? Because they often, I guess what, they get they're in your yard eventually, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the dogs were outside. I'm sure they picked them up from the yard, and then of course it took a lot of bathing.
Yeah,
and you have to comb the dogs routinely, and you know, flea and tick prevention is where it's at.
Yeah,
you know, you treat your dogs a couple times a year, and we missed one treatment, and boy, we paid for it.
Now, I know Mitchell Moat was on the air talking about how, you know, even in animals you don't think of, like squirrels, raccoons, they too carry fleas.
Absolutely. And ticks, you name it. Yep. They are pretty much a vector for all those blood-sucking insects.
And then if they get on humans, that's very uncomfortable.
It's miserable.
To say the least.
Yeah.
So this time of year, you guys at the Ag Center are starting to wrap up the bi-weekly farmer's market.
That's correct. So if you want to come out to the farmer's market, come out this Friday or next week on Tuesday or Friday. And after next Friday, the farmer's market, unfortunately, will be closed for the season. It's kind of a sad time for us in the horticultural world and the farming world, but you can still come out and see us for another 3 market days.
Is the farmer's market more busy or less busy as the season closes out?
You know, this year it has stayed consistently busy. The parking lot and the amount of traffic has come through. Now, obviously, summertime when the kids are out of school, you see a lot more families. And, I think this year our numbers were exponentially larger and sales have reflected that. So it's been a great gardening and farming season and the farmer's market has been booming. Of course, we have the artisans that are set up on Fridays on the other side of that community center. We've got the food trucks. So our diversification of vendors has increased and I think it's had a huge impact on the amount of guests that have come out and seen us.
And what types of things have you seen for sale this year?
Everything you can think of. You know, we've had flowers, we've had honey, we've had, you know, you can buy meat, you can buy half a cow for sale, you know, all of your truck crops, tomatoes, corn, sweet corn, and then a lot of the specialty products. We have a popcorn vendor, man, he sets up on the end of the market. He's got caramel corn and he is phenomenal. That's some of the best popcorn I've ever tasted in my life.
Talking like kettle corn here?
It's kettle corn. Man, is it good. So shout out to that guy. I'm not going to give his exact business name because I don't want to show any preference, but just come to the farmer's market and walk all the way down to the end. And then, of course, the artisans and craftspeople. I mean, they've got woodworking, handicrafts, you know, you see quilts and all kinds of just very unique, locally produced, you know, arts and crafts.
And when going to a farmer's market that is at the Ag Center here in Murfreesboro, you're buying really like truly local stuff.
Absolutely. You know, you go to a lot of farmer's markets or roadside stands. You know, when I see peaches for sale the last week of May, I'm always, you know, like, you know, those didn't come from around here, you know. So when you buy at our farmer's market, you can be guaranteed that stuff is grown and produced somewhere here within, let's say, 90 miles most of our vendors are coming from, and it's Tennessee grown, locally produced, and there's no risk of it being shipped in from Florida, Georgia, or other places.
Yeah, if you see things like what coconuts and pineapples, there's a good chance
dead
it wasn't
away.
Grown here.
Yeah, know? I don't know anybody growing coconuts or pineapples. I'd like to know how they're doing it if they are.
Yeah. You know, I've been to some farmers markets in some other cities, some other areas, and a lot of them in other areas have turned into almost like flea markets.
Absolutely. It's kind of hit or miss, isn't it?
It's quite different.
You see a lot of interesting things at farmers markets across the country.
You do. Now, have you ever had to go out to some of the farms just to verify, all right, you guys are growing this, this, and this here. You're selling it at the market. This makes sense. Have you had to go out to farms?
In the past, when I was an agent in Wilson County, that was a requirement. Now, here at the Rutherford County's farmers market, I'm not responsible for that. We've got farmer's market manager that takes care of that. But we know most of our vendors now. They've been, you know, long-term vendors and we trust them and they're, you know, they're high quality vendors and we trust their words. So
now I'm curious, in Wilson County, do you see that much of a difference in things for sale at the market compared to here?
Not particularly. You know, Wilson County didn't have quite as large of a market. There was an outside pavilion, kind of like what we used to have years ago here in Rutherford County over there by Old Fort Park and Cannonsburg. But, you know, their vendors were a lot smaller, but it was your truck crops. You know, it was corn, it was tomatoes, cucumbers. It was more vegetable-based things.
And are some years different as far as, all right, the size of watermelons this year are X amount of pounds? I mean, do you really see a difference from year to year?
Not so much size, but yield. You know, you'll see certain years, like last year, the yields were way down in your traditional truck crops just because of the weather. Now, this year, despite the heat, you know, it was a challenge, but you know, this late season flush when we had that rain, if anybody has a garden right now, I bet you've got tomatoes and peppers on your vines. And unfortunately, they're not going to make, but it's more of a yield thing year to year.
Well, we were told by one shopper, they were having a hard time getting enough pumpkins in to resell. I don't know if that's everywhere or if that's just a problem that this one farmer had.
I'd say that's pretty widespread in the region just because of the weather that we've had. It's been brutal on a lot of crops. And when you think about when we plant pumpkins, which is a little bit later in the season, that weather at planting was brutal. It was super hot and super dry. And without the proper irrigation system, I mean, it was going to be a struggle.
So probably going to make it a little more expensive to buy a pumpkin this year.
It's supply and demand. You got it.
And then as far as the meat goes at the market, I'm guessing there's better years for cows than others. I don't know, but are there better years for meat that you've noticed?
Well, I don't know if better is the right word, but, you know, prices, you know, I think recently the cattle inventory in our country has been lower than it's been in probably 50 or 60 years. So I do that ag market report every few weeks, and I'm always shocked and amazed at the prices from this year to last year. So you're paying more per pound. You're paying more at the market. Now, is there a better year or a bad year? You know, if you're a grass-fed operation, that certainly could be the case. You know, if your forages are struggling this summer and it's just you don't have a lot of them, that's going to affect your end product when you get that finished meat to the consumer.
So are beef prices up or down right now?
They're up.
Okay.
So, and you know, you see that at the grocery store, that's reflected in the end product that we're, you know, that the consumer is fronting that cost.
Have you ever seen a cow in like the Dominican Republic or Haiti? Or man, they're skinny.
They are. I mean, I tell you what, American agriculture, we pride ourselves on the genetics. And again, I'm not a livestock specialist. I'm a horticulturalist looking from the outside in. But we pride ourselves on high quality genetics, high quality feeds. And we do have a superb production in that realm.
It is wild how you can see a difference in the livestock in one country versus another.
Absolutely.
Huge differences.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now, what is that that cow in like Japan where they feed it beer and
the
stuff?
The Wagyu.
Yeah. You ever had that?
I have had it once or twice.
Any cow?
It's not cheap. And, I'll take a good ribeye any day of the week. Let's put it that way.
As long as you're not paying for it. You know,
right.
if you get it, then
you know,
couldn't be bad.
I never had a ribeye and enjoyed it until last year. And I don't know what the heck was wrong with me, but started reverse searing ribeyes on the Pit Boss. And my goodness gracious, that beats any filet mignon or Wagyu you can have, I'll tell you that.
What has been more popular, you know, I guess, over the last couple of years versus in the past? Like, I mean, is pork selling hotter than it used to? Or what is big?
You know, I can't really speak to that just because I'm not in that livestock
world. Not a pig farmer either, are you?
Not a pig farmer, thankfully. Pigs scare the heck out of me. I tell you what, any animal that could potentially eat you, this is why I'm a horticulturalist. You know, I've always said when plants start biting or talking or pooping, I'm out. Excuse the language there. But, you know, animals do all three of those things. But in terms of meat production, you know, I think it's remained steady in all markets.
Yeah, I don't want to be a farmer and be eaten by my pigs.
Nope, sure don't. That's make the wrong slip in that pig pen, and you never know. You could become lunch.
Yeah, or make the wrong person mad they feed you to the pigs.
That's exactly right.
Now,
it's scary.
We do have wild hogs, though.
Yeah, it's become a real issue here. You know, the wild hogs came in from the southwest, I think, is where they came up through Texas, Louisiana. And they're devastating for crops. You know, if you've got corn or soybeans out in a field, they'll root around, they'll forage in that field, and there's a lot of folks out there now that are specialty trappers and hunters. I've seen videos where they'll get in a helicopter.
I've seen that.
Night vision. And it's pretty crazy. But the wild hog populations have increased significantly here in the last, I'd say, 10 years. So we haven't seen so much of an issue in more of the suburban areas like what we have here in Rutherford County. But in other spots, it's been a big issue.
And people, they'll pay big money to go out to some random farm in Tennessee to go hunting via helicopter.
I can't even guess what they must pay, but
there's no telling.
It's a lot, I'm sure.
And then what do they do with the hog afterwards? I mean, do they eat it, stuff it? What takes place?
I think the meat is very
gamey.
It's low quality, very gamey. So I don't know exactly. I think they're probably just disposed of in a certain way. I don't know exactly how they do it, but I don't think it's used for food consumption.
And then another animal that is kind of interesting to follow, bears coming into this Middle Tennessee area. We're seeing more and more reports of that.
We had that bear, what was it, on Shelbyville Pike last year?
Hit by a driver, yeah.
I mean, that's unreal to me. You know, I've lived in Rutherford County since 1995, and the fact that we've got bears here now is pretty incredible.
It really is.
I don't know what's driving that. You know, I think it's literally habitat loss in certain areas, and they're kind of being pushed farther and farther west. But, you know, and alligators. We think about, we've got this invasion.
There's alligators in Tennessee now?
There are. You know, there's areas of West Tennessee where they routinely find alligators. And as those summer temps remain warmer, and it's really more of the wintertime temperatures remaining more mild. But there have been, I'd say in the last 5 or 6 years, there has been more alligators that have been reported in West Tennessee than ever before.
I had no idea.
So next time you're out in the Stones River,
look carefully for alligators.
I don't expect we'll have them here in Middle Tennessee, but in West Tennessee, they're there.
I really didn't know. So they're living, I know there's a lot of low-lying swamp areas in West Tennessee.
Perfect habitat for gators, yep.
So they can survive winter.
They can. If it's a mild winter, they kind of go into a shutdown mode. They're a reptile. So even if it gets super cold, they kind of just shut down metabolically. It's not necessarily a good thing for them, but if the winter is just mild enough, they're coming up from Louisiana and Texas.
The Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency says that in March, somebody fishing caught a 3-foot alligator in Norris Lake this year. Now that is close to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Knoxville, that direction. And then in May of this year, an alligator 8 feet in length was spotted in Fayette County, Tennessee. Now that is in West Tennessee, close to Memphis. In fact, it's the county right next to Shelby County.
Same thing with armadillos. I mean, we never saw an armadillo 20 years ago.
Now they're all up and down the highway.
They are everywhere. I've got 3 or 4 living in my backfield right now. I walk out there and I see they root around. They're eating insects and they can cause a lot of damage. It looks like somebody played golf in your yard all night long and just took about 1,000 divots.
I didn't know that's what they do. So,
yep, kind of like skunks will do the same thing. It just looks like a little hole in the ground, and they'll push the turf up, and it can be very damaging to a fine turf area.
Well, you know, now that you mentioned that, you know, we didn't have armadillos here not too long ago. They weren't here at all. And then all of a sudden, they're here everywhere.
Everywhere.
It makes more sense about the alligators, the bears, all that stuff.
We've seen animals in our area that we've never seen before. So, and I think a lot of it is habitat and weather related.
I know the first report I heard about bears in Middle Tennessee, I think it was after a big fire, a forest fire in East Tennessee.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then I think it was DeKalb County where it was spotted.
Right.
And then, last year, I guess it was, the black bear on Highway 231 South in Shelbyville being hit by a motorist.
And you have to wonder, how far did that bear come? You know, what's their range? You know, I'm not a wildlife biologist, but I'd say it's probably several hundred miles.
I wonder how long it takes them to actually make that trip.
And you think about all the roads and all the urban and suburban areas that bear had to cross to get to Middle Tennessee. It's pretty astounding.
And do they meet up with other bears once they're here? Because obviously they populate somehow.
I have no idea. I mean, imagining that they're coming this way, there has to be a small population. So
yeah, like a get together somewhere.
Right. The bear club. I don't know.
I wonder if it's ever gonna be, you know, like you see those videos shared from people in California where they spotted a coyote, a panther, whatever it is, digging through the trash. Are we gonna start seeing more of that here?
Boy, I hope not. You know, I don't think we're going to see this skyrocketing bear population. I think it's going to be sporadic like that. But, you know, coyotes have certainly been more prevalent in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I've seen some out during the day, which is not a good sign.
It isn't. And you know, people, the poor coyotes are very, they're kind of a maligned creature, you know. And I think people are concerned if you're in a neighborhood and you've got small dogs outside. There have been reported cases of those small dogs becoming lunch, but for the most part, coyotes are pretty standoffish. Of course, they've always been an issue in traditional livestock operations. I mean, they'll take a small calf out or a sheep or a goat, but you know, for the most part, they avoid us and we should avoid them.
Yeah. So the bears, that's the main thing we need to be concerned about if any of these animals, you know, really start to creep up on us. Because I don't know. Do you think alligators could come to Murfreesboro?
I really don't. And the day we see one is the day I'm thinking about moving farther east.
It's a good call. Yeah, because I don't know. It is a lot warmer, more humid in West Tennessee by far.
It is. Yeah, the conditions are slightly different than they are here. And just the habitat is very different as well. Like you said, that swampy, boggy habitat. It's perfect for gators.
Now, what else is happening this time of year for folks who want to maintain a nice looking yard? I know mine was more brown this year for sure.
Yep.
But what can we do right now?
So overseeding grasses, this is the perfect time for cool season grasses. So if you want to do a fescue or an annual ryegrass, perennial ryegrass, bluegrass mix. I know I sowed my fescue out actually in September right after that big rain we had. And it's thriving right now. So if you want to renovate your turf and have green grass for the winter, we say that we try to get those grass overseeded by Halloween. That's kind of the cutoff date.
Now, there was a time that I think a lot of contractors were using like Kentucky fescue on the yards of new homes. Nowadays, you have more and more people going in and putting this expensive sod in.
Yeah, sod is really the most surefire way. I still see a lot of contractors using what we call the contractor blend. And unfortunately, a lot of it's ryegrass. And ryegrass will not survive the heat. You know, it looks really good and green in the summer, or I'm sorry, in the spring and fall and winter to pass that initial inspection. But as soon as the summer heat comes, it's toast. And the same thing with fescue. You know, a lot of these new home construction sites, that soil is about like a concrete pad. I mean, it's compacted. There's not a lot of area for roots to grow. And fescue turf is a cool season grass. And by name, it doesn't like the heat. And it certainly took a beating this year.
So bringing in this farm-grown turf, this farm-grown sod that they lay out in squares, does that stuff last?
It depends on the type and how well you care for it. You know, if you can get it on the ground and care for it properly, it certainly absolutely has every chance in the world to survive. I know we did some sodding. Me and Mitchell did the sodding, actually. He had some new varieties brought in over the summer. He's got some turf demonstration plots. And, of course, we have irrigation, and it's Mitchell. So you know it's going to be cared for top-notch way. But it does great. I mean, it looks phenomenal right now. I was admiring it yesterday. So, I mean, sod is the most surefire way, immediate satisfaction to get turf going.
And if you don't care for it, that could be a really expensive lesson.
Absolutely. You know, especially if you get zoysia. You know, zoysia is kind of the Cadillac of all sods. And if people don't care for it properly, it's going to be stressed and it's going to die.
Now, I know realistically, I think, shouldn't you be using a different kind of mower on some of that sod? Because it's brand new. The weight of your mower may, you know, dig it deeper into the actual dirt.
Right. You know, you don't want to be out there with a 60-inch zero turn right after you sod. Those big tires will cause some damage. But for the most part, you don't necessarily have to use a different mower. You just want to be cognizant of the weight of that mower, the moisture level, and just be careful when you're making turns, especially on zero turn mowers, man. When those wheels pivot, they can absolutely just grind that turf to a pulp.
I don't think anybody thinks about that when buying a zero turn, but yeah, that's where they do all the damage on every single turn.
Absolutely. So when I sow my grass seed out in the fall, I have to push mow that grass. And I'm not a fan of push mowing, but yeah, I know better than to try to do it with my zero turn, because I'll have all these perfectly, you know, basketball size wheel marks on every turn, and that turf will just be dead in that spot.
I found the key is to make your turns in the neighbor's yard.
I want to try that out. But the problem is my neighbor sows grass seed too, so it'll be very obvious.
Yeah, what happened to your yard, man? I don't know. Yeah, I can see where that'd be kind of an issue there. But you can go to the Ag Center. You can see different types of turf. You can decide then, hey, this one looks good. Are those cared for year-round so you can see what lasts in the winter?
Absolutely. Yep. So we've got, you know, Mitchell Moat takes care of those. And we've got, I think we just added maybe 20 or 30 new varieties out there of fescue that we sowed out 2 weeks ago. And we try to use varieties that are new, up-and-coming, heat and drought tolerant. So we've got cool season grasses and warm season grasses. So if you're looking at renovating turf and you're not exactly sure where to start, come visit us and we'll be glad to help you.
Is there one grass that lasts year-round that will look nice year-round?
You know, only grass that'll last year-round under irrigation is a fescue turf. You know, fescue is the green grass through the winter. Again, but if you don't have irrigation in the summer, it really doesn't stand a chance. And even this year with irrigation, it was struggling. But, you know, we're in this transition zone in Tennessee where we don't support cool season or warm season grasses year round. You know, the Bermuda grass will go dormant in the winter, but then the fescue grasses will go dormant in the summer, or at least try to. So growing grass here, we make this joke, you know, we can grow a lot of grasses in Tennessee. We just don't grow any of them very well. And that is a fact.
I'm seeing a lot of companies now advertise how they can come in and put what basically amounts to AstroTurf in your backyard.
I've seen more of it, especially if you have pets. You know, it's permeable and it's extremely low maintenance. If you've got a small townhome, right? I see this in a lot of townhome areas where if you've got a small patio backyard, you know, it's not worth trying to grow grass in a 20 by 20 square foot, you know, square. Yeah. So I've seen more and more of that. And I don't have anything against that. Now, I am a turf guy. I like grass. I like that natural feel of it. I love the way it looks. I love the way it smells. So I don't have any intentions of ever using AstroTurf because that's essentially what it is.
And underneath it, you've got these little black pellets, or I guess some people use sand of some kind.
Right. It'll have a permeable surface. It'll be a, you know, sometimes it's a foot or more layer of different layers of different permeable things. And of course, it's got those rubber pellets. If you've ever walked on the field at MTSU's football stadium, you'll see that black underlaying, you know, black little rubbery pebbles. Now, it gets hot in the summer, though. That's one of the drawbacks, is that turf gets quite hot. And even in synthetic turf, you still have to keep it watered because it'll dry out and it'll biodegrade.
It looks amazingly real compared to, like, the, you know, what people used to put on back patio, that green.
It was like a mat.
Yeah.
I remember playing peewee football at MTSU's football stadium back in the mid-90s, and it was like playing in a parking lot.
And playing on sandpaper.
Oh, man. We'd have to wrap our elbows and knees. I was 12 years old and would come out just bloodied, you know. But the new turf is very realistic looking. It's longer. It's softer. And there's been so much research that's gone into that. It's really again, I'm never going to use it, but it certainly looks better. And for the right person in the right spot, it is certainly an option.
You know, and I could see the advantage of having that like around a swimming pool.
Right.
You know, it
if you still want that green look, that natural look, that is certainly the way to go.
It does. I guess it doesn't fade like some of that fake stuff used to.
Yeah, exactly. It's got a lot more. It's not as degradable as they used to be. They last longer. It still has a lifespan, you know, anywhere between 10 and 15 years, just like any other synthetic-based thing. But it is certainly more durable than some of the older types.
Again, with us this morning, Justin Stefanski from the Agriculture Extension Service. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. MTE's Drive EV program has resources for members who would like to learn more about all aspects of EVs. MTE is developing programs and educational materials to answer member questions. Learn more at driveev.com.
This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. One of the other things that we're doing on the remodel is that we're putting in ceiling tiles that have a high absorption for sound and be able to enjoy their meals with their families. We're bringing a lot of the green back, and we're bringing back retro light fixtures. We've added a wall while updating the look and making it a lot more fresh. Now that you've heard about the changes that we're making at Demas's, you need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. If you find yourself feeling stressed, come enjoy the benefits of fish in our Tranquil Aquatics Department. Studies have proven that watching aquarium fish can reduce stress and lower blood pressure. We are proud and thankful to be celebrating our 33rd year in the Murfreesboro community. That's Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro. Please check out our Facebook page.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come and see us for all your gardening, home, and farm needs. We have a great selection of clothing, farm items, and also our wonderful gift department. Please come see us for all your gift items. And we also have local honey. And if you're interested in being a beekeeper, we do have supplies for that. We have from hives to suits to whatever you need to take care of those bees. We're located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
You're tuned to WGNS, and this morning from the Agriculture Extension Service, we have Justin Stefanski in studio. By the way, early voting is going on now, and it will wrap up October 31st. So Halloween is when that wraps up, but got underway yesterday, and I know the Agriculture Extension Service. It is a location for early voting, but not the main office.
Not the main office. So there'll be big signs with arrows set up, and it'll be where the livestock barn is. So it's basically in between the main office and the community center, which is where the farmers market is.
And then according to the Election Commission, you can early vote Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. And I think those are the same hours at every early voting location. Then Saturdays, 8 to 2. But again, you can go to the Rutherford County Election Commission website for details. Farmers Market, again, that's about to wrap up. Next week's the last
Farmers Market. Next Friday will be the last one. I think that's the 25th.
So that's it for the season. Then opens back up when?
It'll open back up in May.
Are you going to have farmers market withdrawals or anything?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's always exciting. You know, during the farmers market season, I'm the coordinator for the Master Gardener program, and we always have volunteers out in our demonstration gardens, and we're giving tours, and it is kind of a sad day when that comes to an end, because it's always nice to see folks coming out, touring our gardens, seeing the Master Gardeners lovingly tending things, and so it is a little sad.
Now, speaking of Master Gardeners, I know that I don't know if it just seems like it, but it seems like there are more people who are becoming Master Gardeners these days.
That is a fact. Absolutely. You know that, and people love that title, Master Gardener.
I bet they do.
I mean, it's pretty special, isn't it? So, you know, we do have a very strong Master Gardener program here. We're currently accepting applications for our upcoming training class, which is the first step. That class will begin in January and run through April. It's Tuesdays from 9 a.m. till noon over at Lane Agri Park. But the class will definitely fill up, so it's first come, first serve. I'd say it's already a quarter full right now. So if you're interested in signing up, check out our website, rutherford.tennessee.edu. Or you can call our office, 615-898-7710. Or you can email me, jski@utk.edu.
Nobody's going to get that, you know.
I know it. I know it. But I'd say it anyways, jski@utk.edu. But feel free to reach out to us and send us in an application. The course will cost $175. It's a great value. You'll get 14 weeks of very good training, hands-on experiences. You'll get a phenomenal notebook that is a three-ring binder with 14 different individualized chapters. We cover a little bit of everything. We talk about soil, environments, water management, trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables, you name it, we cover it.
I've met a lot of people who are master gardeners who like live in townhomes or apartment complexes. And that's kind of the cool thing about being a master gardener. You can learn everything about it. You can learn how to have little potted gardens, if you would,
right,
at your apartment. But it's cool, the unique group of people.
The uniqueness. And you really, the end goal of Master Gardening is to give back. You know, it's a volunteer-based organization. And that really is the mission of Master Gardeners, is to get the knowledge and then share that knowledge with the public. So that's what we do through our demonstration gardens at Lane Agri Park. We've got rain garden, vegetable garden, native plant garden, butterfly gardens, herb gardens. There's other gardens that I'm forgetting right now. But that's really the goal, is to give back and to share that knowledge with the community.
I think the majority of people who live outside of Tennessee, never been here, they assume that everybody in Tennessee has a farm. But the cool thing is, a lot of the people I've met who become master gardeners, they're not from Tennessee. And no. I don't know if it's just their thought, I can't wait to move to Tennessee. I'm going to learn how to be a farmer. And that's just part of it, you know?
And I think they get here and they realize the challenges of growing anything in Tennessee.
Yeah.
They come from either the Pacific Northwest, the Big C out west, there, we won't name it by name. And then, of course, the Northeast, people from Ohio like me. I've been here a long time, though, so don't hold that against me. But they come to Tennessee and they think that they can do the same things. And they are very upset when they realize that it's hotter than Hades here. We have humidity. If there's a bug that exists on Earth, there's a good chance it's going to come to Tennessee. A lot of disease pressure. So they come here and then they realize, I was a great gardener, but I am a poor gardener now. So that is an incentive for a lot of folks to become a master gardener. They want to learn how to do things well here in Tennessee.
On the West Coast, they do, there's vineyards everywhere. I mean, that area known for vineyards everywhere. Right. They do tours, train tours, bus tours of vineyards, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know a few years back, we started seeing more and more vineyards in Tennessee just almost popping up overnight.
Right.
But where is all of that today? Are there still a lot of vineyards in Tennessee?
There still are. You know, we've got a pretty strong vineyard, business outlook here. There's more of them coming in every year. There's some great, great varieties that are specifically grown here in Tennessee. And of course, it's just we do have a lot of transplants from the West Coast. And they come here and they do want to start a vineyard, and more power to them. But don't expect to grow a Concord grape here in Tennessee, I'll tell you that.
And we even saw the pop-up of a brand new distillery a few years back Highway 231.
That business has just been taking off like crazy.
Yeah, it really has. And I don't know if you've driven past that particular distillery, but man, it's gotten huge.
Sprawling.
Yeah. It looks very expensive too.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Nice looking.
Absolutely. Great facility.
But we are seeing more of that in Tennessee.
And we think about the shift of agriculture. You know, people aren't necessarily row cropping anymore. And a lot of these farm operations, I tell you what, you will never meet a smarter human being on earth than a farmer. They know how to do things that you can't even imagine, right? But they're diversifying their operations. We've seen agritourism take off, you know, where they used to be growing row crops. Now they're doing pick-your-own-berry operations, and they're doing weddings. So, you know, farmers are intelligent people, and they know how to make a dollar. So a lot of these traditional farming operations have shifted into more what we would call value-added products. So that's your small fruits, your vineyards, your agritourism-type businesses. So, you know, that market has really increased exponentially as well.
You can now get a degree in fermenting at FDSU. I mean, so you could become, you know, a yogurt maker or open a distillery.
I'm a big fan of the sauerkraut myself, but, you know, and also, you know, a little rye whiskey on the rocks is not too bad, too.
But it's wild, not only what you can farm and what farmers can do, but the amount of degrees that are now available that didn't used to be that are geared towards that super, farming industry.
Super niche things that you never imagine. You know, when I was at MTSU, if you'd have told me now that there'd be a fermentation science degree, I said, you're absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But here we are in 2024.
And it's big money. I mean, there's a lot of money in that sector for sure.
That sector needs trained, skilled individuals to come into that marketplace and be able to have the skills, the knowledge, and the educational background to help run these organizations. So, you know, it's a very marketable degree, in my opinion.
You know, I know over the years, land's gotten more expensive, so farms have gotten smaller. So I do wonder if some of these little things that farmers have come up with, like, you know, having a huge wedding venue at their farm, I wonder if those are just ways of making the most out of the property that you do have.
That's 100% accurate. You know, they're trying to maximize the land that they have and keep those family farms in business. You know, they're not growing pigs and cattle and row crops. They are doing, they still may do some of that, but they're smart folks, and they're trying to maximize the land that they have. And, you know, Tennessee, the amount of acreage that's being lost, especially here in Rutherford County, is staggering. And there's been some studies put out by Farm Bureau and the University of Tennessee, and it's a big problem. I mean, we're growing more houses now than we are food. And, you know, one of the greatest things I've heard, I think Mitchell shared this with me, he says, how many days a year do you need a dentist or a doctor or a lawyer? Maybe two or three, right? How many days of the year do you need a farmer? Three times a day, every single day of your life, right? So we've got less farms, less farmland. You know, where do they build houses? They build it on top of the most prime agricultural land possible. And everywhere I turn, I see more houses. So, you know, we just have to be cognizant of that. Less farms equals less food, and there's more demand on farmers. You know, it's a high-stakes business now. Every farmer has to produce food for a whole lot more people than they used to.
Yeah, because, like you said, the land's a lot smaller than it used to be,
right.
And a lot of opportunity is lost once that land becomes smaller.
Gone forever. Once you build a neighborhood or that farm gets decreased, their ability to produce food and fiber is either gone or diminished significantly.
Very few century farms out there, too. I mean, hardly any, it seems like.
You don't see as many of them anymore, I tell you that. And, you know, I used to drive around the country when there still was country here in Rutherford County, and you'd see those signs on the fence posts quite a bit. And anytime I do see one now, man, it's kind of a little treasure to see it.
And if you do see one today, it has shrunk compared to how big it was
absolutely.
When it first opened.
You can almost guarantee it. These family farms have been divided. A lot of the land has been sold off, and, you know, those farms are definitely not as big as they once were, for sure.
Again, Justin Stefanski with us this morning from the Agriculture Extension Service, and we're about out of time right now. But again, wrapping up the show, the last farmers market for the year is coming up next week, and that's Tuesday and Friday. What times in the morning is that open?
It'll be open from 8 to noon.
And then are they going to still have classes there next week? You know, just little...
Yeah, can come out and tour the demonstration gardens. We'll have folks out there. So absolutely come by and learn a little thing here and there about gardening.
The fishing pond, is that open for business right now?
24/7.
Good
as
deal.
As long as you got a license, come out and do a little fishing.
So you can go fishing there when the place is closed, I guess.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Hey, what are people catching a lot?
They do. You know, I've caught one fish out of it, but don't use that as your barometer for how good it is for fishing. It's been restocked this year, and I see fish coming out every day.
Good. What kind of fish do you know?
We got bluegill. We got catfish. I've been told that there's some bass in there, but you know.
No alligators.
No alligators as far as I know.
That's good. All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon, I guess.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Receive breaking news, sports scores, traffic, and weather bulletins on your cell phone. Sign up for text alerts at WGNSradio.com.